We're going to talk about that. Look ahead to the Chargers from USA Today. It's the Ravens Wire. Joins us every Tuesday. It's Kevin Allstriker. Kevin, good morning. What's up?
Hey, guys. Yeah, tough one for Baltimore. You know, just the defense showed up like we've been wanting all season, but every other aspect of the team really didn't, and results in a tough Pittsburgh game, and now you're 7-4, 2-2 in the division.
All right. We just heard the update with Nolan McGraw, John Harbaugh talking about the penalties, and he stops here. And they've got 92 on the year, which is incredible, as they're the worst in that area. As you've watched all 11 games, is there one underlying theme outside of the penalties? Is it an undisciplined ball club? Are they technique poor? I mean, why? I mean, it just piles up week after week after week.
Yeah, I think it's everything where, you know, obviously John Harbaugh and the coaching staff isn't out there committing those penalties, but, you know, you have to have your guys ready to play each and every week. And for the players, I mean, you have to stay disciplined, where I know for a lot of times when penalties like this happen or there are a lot called in the game, you look and a lot of the conversation is around the refs. I'm like, oh, were the refs good? Were they not? I thought the refs were fine on Sunday. You know, a lot of the penalties were penalties. You know, even when you talk about the illegal man downfield penalties, obviously those called on Patrick McCary, although you could have picked a lot of different offensive linemen for some of those penalties. But sometimes it's just as simple as, you know, just disrupting timing for defenses for those plays, where as an offensive lineman, you're already programmed to go down and block on those screen plays. And if Lamar holds the ball for just a split second too long and they're already running down the field, well, that obviously makes those penalties happen. So it has to be better disciplined football from the Ravens. And, I mean, it starts with everybody. It's not one particular player, one particular coach, one particular aspect. But even on special teams, I mean, they're putting themselves in pretty awful situations time and time again, where John Harbaugh talked after the game about, you know, they'd gotten way too many second and longs where they'd have a 8-yard gain on first down, 15-yard gain on first down, but it would come back. And instead of having second and one, you're automatically in first and 15. And it changes drives. And obviously for Baltimore, they weren't able to capitalize on anything because their penalties kept piling up.
Hey, Kevin, I thought that, you know, I just finished watching first half of all 22. I thought Lamar played the worst game he's played this year.
Yeah, it was definitely Lamar's worst game, and had some throws he would probably like to have back and maybe some decisions he'd like to have back too. The interception, obviously, was just a great play by Peyton Wilson. I mean, it's great. Justice Hill going to the ground, he rips that thing away. But, you know, for the greatness we've seen out of Lamar this season, or not, you really used to seeing Lamar have that type of game. But as we talked about last week, this Pittsburgh defense just gives Lamar Jackson fits on fits on fits. And I thought that they did a really good job, Pittsburgh at least, of shutting down Derrick Henry in the ground game and taking away Baltimore's short, quick passing game to make Lamar hold on to the ball. And Pittsburgh was able to get pressure on Lamar, speed up his clock a little bit, and it just felt like they weren't really able to get a rhythm, the entire offense, Lamar included. So I agree with you. I think it was Lamar's worst game of the season. And, look, I mean, I'm sure he's looking forward to the rematch in a couple weeks, but, you know, maybe he's not, based off of how the Ravens have really struggled against Pittsburgh. 1-8 in their last 9 is a tough record to have.
Yeah, the thing to me, Kevin, is they only ran 54 plays, and I disagree with you a little bit. I thought, you know, I mean, Henry averaged 6.5 yards a carry in the first half. I don't think they really shot down the run. What happened was the penalties killed them, and then they're in such long yardage situations. All right, they took away the short stuff, but you know what? The guys down the field were wide open. And Lamar was making his decision making. I thought that was the worst that I'd seen, because he was deciding, I think, early on where he was throwing the ball to instead of going through the reads. He didn't look calm, cool, collective, confident in his reads and throwing the ball to the open receiver.
Yeah, and that's kind of been the calling card of Lamar this season. I agree with you, where he's been able to kind of play his game and dictate game flow, but we really didn't see that on Sunday from Lamar. And when that happens, and you mentioned the decision-making, yeah, it can be really tough just because of the fact that, you know, with this Ravens offense, what we've seen out of them, a lot of the time they're able to kind of dictate what they want to do, because you have Lamar and you have Derrick Henry, and it's essentially saying, well, pick your poison. We're going to either do this or do that. You're going to have to choose. But for Pittsburgh, I thought they did a good job of kind of controlling that game flow themselves. And then we did see the decision-making from Lamar, where, you know, there's a bunch on film that you can look at in terms of players that were open that he missed. There were drops. There were penalties. There were turnovers. It's just every single aspect, it felt like it was just sloppiness. And the defense holds Pittsburgh's offense to 4 of 16 on third down, and, you know, 6 field goals. They don't allow Pittsburgh to score a touchdown. It's kind of like the game we've been asking for the most part from that defense. And the offense is all of a sudden just can't get the job done.
Yeah, and you know what's funny is I mean, they only ran 24 plays the second half, because so many people are saying, well, you know, Henry didn't get to carry the ball in the fourth quarter. Well, hell, they only had 24 plays the whole second half. And, you know, in the third quarter, the one drive was 11. So in the fourth quarter, they had 13 plays in the fourth quarter. Now, the thing that I wanted to ask you about was, I thought the communication was outstanding and with the two safeties. And what I see going forward, tell me what you think. I see Tre'Davious White on the outside a lot, and then I see Brandon Stevens lined up on the inside.
I could see it, and we saw Stevens. I think he got 6 slot snaps and 4 in the box last week because, you know, Trey White is a player that obviously injuries have kind of derailed his career a little bit, but he was a star, one of the best corners in the league in Buffalo. Is he that player anymore? I'm not so sure, because the injuries obviously had some level of a toll, but I think to me that – your plan is the right one, because we've seen far too many times here at Brandon Stevens. We're now 11 weeks into the season. We're in week 12. Stevens can't get his head around for the ball. And on those 2 deep shots to George Pickens, what did Trey White do? He got his head around for the ball and put himself in position to make a play. And that's what this team needs. So I would expect it to be something along those lines of what you said. I'm not sure it's going to be solely Trey White out there, and then they completely move Brandon Stevens inside it. They might do rotation. If it was me, I would just do it full time. But I think that Trey White, even though it was just one game, I mean, we've seen Brandon Stevens. It's kind of been a fall from grace for him here in a lot of different aspects. And it seems like teams are just picking on him. So I feel like with Trey White, he gives you just the veteran presence and, you know, the ability to make a play or two. And he made 2 big ones on Sunday, and I think you should be rewarded for that.
He's Kevin Allstriker, USA Today, the Ravens Wire. Ravens favorite again on the road, Kevin, against a team with a better record than them. So appropriate spread. And real quick, your level of concern for Justin Tucker is what? 10, meaning they need a new kicker, and there's going to be a line of people at one winning drive today.
Yeah, I'm not going 10. I think it's going to be, you know, Justin Tucker is going to be the guy, obviously. But I'd be lying if I didn't say I wasn't concerned. I'll probably say 7.5. I mean, there's a shot he turns it around. But again, we're 11 weeks into the season. And, you know, if there was something that could have been fixed, I would assume it would have been fixed by now. But, hey, there's always a shot it does. So, but I'm still concerned. I'd say 7.5.
All right, Ravens, 3-point favorites at Vegas. According to Vegas, ESPN bet. Appropriate spread or not? Chargers, they've won 4 in a row, 5 of 6. Why are the Ravens favorite? What the hell's going on here?
I'd probably say they looked at that Cincy comeback in the second half and said, I don't know about that. So, two teams that have to get it together, I'd say. But look, the Harbaugh is going to be an interesting one. I'm looking forward to it.
Kevin Allstriker, USA Today, the Ravens Wire. Kevin, always appreciate the time. Enjoy the rest of your Turn It Up Tuesday.
You got it, guys. Thanks so much. Talk soon.
There's Kevin Allstriker. That's right. We haven't even gotten into the Harbaugh yet.
Yeah.
That's coming up, I'm sure, tomorrow to start to ramp up in coverage for sure. We'll come back. It's the whip around. What happened in the world of sports last night? Well, NBA, NHL, some college basketball games we'll get into. Stay tuned for that. And a couple of historic things of local significance. Then we'll look at Vinny's Dirty Dozen as the 12 best teams put together by him. We're going to break them down heading into week 12. Cowboys aren't going to be part of the fun. Spoiler alert.
Vinny and Hades whip.
Brought to you by Fox Hill Pizzeria and Crab Cakes. The best crab cakes in Harford County.
1057 The Fan.
Diddy and Andy, 105.7 The Fan here on this Turn It Up Tuesday, cranking it up to 12, because that's how loud it goes. Bob Andy V. Serrato, Nolan McGraw, other side of the glass. We were talking about this yesterday during the whip, that a certain number 8 down in D.C. been drinking from the Fountain of Youth, and boy, he must still be guzzling that stuff.
Downs Philadelphia 3-2. Ovechkin loads and scores! Alex Ovechkin, pinpoint to the top shelf.
Joe B., Monumental Sports on the call. Two more goals for Ovechkin. That's 5 in 2 games, right?
Yeah, how about 5 goals in his last 5 periods is what he had. No, he's been on fire. And this is, in his 18-year career, I think it's 18 years, 18-year career, this is his best start for the first 18 games. So he leads the league in goals right now. Thing about it is that he got hit, his knee, and it looked like it kind of hyperextended kind of thing. I'm guessing that it's probably pretty stiff today. He may be out a little bit, but they're in first place in the Metro. And 27 points.
He's a little aged in a hockey player sense.
Oh, no doubt.
We'd all kill to be 30-some years old again, but it could put him on the shelf, but who knows? Caps, as Vinny said, 13-4-1 on the year. Host Colorado Thursday night. They're 10-9. As a Washington
That's
won
back
by the,
home.
Yeah,
now.
Washington won, by the way, 6-2 over in Utah.
Yeah, and they were down 1-0, and then they came back, bam, bam. It was 3-1 in the first, and John Carlson, he scored, but then they reviewed it, and they called goalie interference, which was total BS. You know, otherwise they'd have been up 4-1. It would have been 7-2. But the Caps are playing extremely good. I mean, they're, 3-0 on the road? And they played two good teams in Colorado and Vegas. And then they beat Utah, who's just middle of the road.
Now, this is a subject we'll discuss later, more detailed, with John Mioli from the Baltimore Banner coming up at 1:30. But Colton Cowser did not win the American League Rookie of the Year. Went to Luis Gil of the Yankees, who got 15 of the first-place votes. Cowser got 13, 11 second-place votes, 106 to 101 in point total. The bad news is that you get that pick
because
your guy won it. And the pick the Orioles got last year for Gunnar Henderson, they threw into the Corbin Burns trade with D.O. Hall and Joey Ortiz. Now the Yankees get it. Hey, Luis Gil in the first half was brilliant. Made the all-star team. He was so good. But Cowser, Gold Glove finalist, you know, up there among the league leaders in all these offensive categories for rookies. But he falls short. But the hand's getting better. Level up a little bit, and we'll move on from there, because Colton Cowser is going to be a very important piece of the Orioles for the foreseeable future. In the National League, Paul Skeens gets it. Jackson Merrill, Severna Park. Padres, outstanding center fielder. He finished second, but Paul Skeensy, he's got a chance to win the Cy Young Award.
Has anybody done that?
Fernando Valenzuela did.
Okay.
And by the way, this is the first time in years that two pitchers won Rookie of the Year. It's happened before. Okay. I mean, Fernando and Rigetti did it. Bird Fidrich, Pat Zachary way back when. So it's happened before, Nolan.
Yeah, 81 was the last time, as you mentioned there, the Yankees and I guess it was Valenzuela.
Yeah, it was. Fernando and Rigetti, and they played against each other in the World Series. As a matter of fact, pitched against each other in Game 3. So, Colton Cowser, we'll talk about that. Today's accept your qualifying offer day. Like, Mick Martinez for the Reds accepted the qualifying offer, represented by Scott Boras, by the way, pitcher. So, he gets 21.6. Santander and Corbin Burns are not accepting, which means if they sign elsewhere, the Orioles get a draft pick as compensation in the Rule 5 draft. You got to get that thing settled. So John Mioli's got a lot to talk about with us later in the program. Tonight, College Hoops, Terps hosting Canisius. Golden Griffs, man. 0-5. They've lost every game by double digits. Maryland coming off that frustrating loss to Marquette. I'm thinking a little puffy pants. Terps are 30-point favorites in the game tonight, which you can hear on the Fan. Chris Nockey, Maryland Radio Network, will preview that and get his impressions of Maryland 4 games in to this season. Maryland football, they host Iowa Saturday at noon. Terps need to win their last 2 games to get bowl eligible. Not holding my breath.
No, not at all. And I saw, Bob, the Penn State game's 3:30 at Penn State.
Couple weeks,
yeah. So, no, I'm... once they lost to Rutgers, that was it. And the telltale was, I mean, all the way back to Michigan State. Because, you know what? I mean, 57-yard field goal. They jump off sides or whatever, and they move it up, and they give and they make the field goal, and they lose to Michigan. That was kind of a sign of what was to come.
You get blown out at Northwestern?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't do that. It's just unacceptable. I mean, they hung with Indiana for a while, but, you know, their conference win was against USC, and USC probably like to have that one back.
Yeah, along with the one against Minnesota and everybody else.
So the Terps, struggle city right now. Iowa, they're coming off a bye. Their last game, they lost to UCLA. We'll talk more college football later in the week. NBA last night here on the Whip Around Video and Haney 105.7 The Fan. Wizards get blown out by the Knicks, 134-106. Jalen Brunson, 26 points, 11 assists, 4. The New York Ball Club above Carrington. He's having a nice rookie season. Baltimore zone, 18 points, 4 boards to assist. Chicago, 122-112 over Detroit. Jalen Smith sticks. Mount St. Joe, University of Maryland. Baltimore, 8 points, 5 boards to assist there. It was Miami, 106-89 over Philly. Jimmy Buckets had 30. Haywood Highsmith, Curley, he had 9 points, a board, and an assist. Philly's 2-11. And both George and Embiid played last night. Now, Maxey's out. But the Wizards are 2-11. Put it in perspective a little bit. Toronto blows out Indiana last night, 130-119. R.J. Barrett at 39 points. Bruno Fernando, Emmanuel Quickly, local guys. Bruno at Maryland, Quickly from Baltimore. Both are hurt.
Yeah.
Neither one played.
Quickly's got an ulnar.
Milwaukee survives Houston, 101-100. In that one, Cam Whitmore, Baltimore Spalding, he didn't play, dealing with a sore knee there. Orlando, 109-99 over the Phoenix Suns as they handle their business. Franz Wagner, remember how annoying he was at Michigan? I guess he's still annoying unless you're a fan of Orlando. He had 32. Damian Lee, Calvert Hall, got a DNP there. Atlanta survived Sacramento, 109-108. DeAndre Hunter, the kid from Virginia, 24 points. Kevin Herter, Maryland, 9 points, 5 boards, 3 assists, but he was 1 for 10 from beyond the arc. Alex Len started. He had 2 points, 3 rebounds, and an assist in that one. And this day in sports history, today is November the 19th. Cal Ripken, 1991, won a second Most Valuable Player award. 323 batting average, 34 homers, 114 ribbies, 940 OPS. He's MVP of the All-Star game as well. Won a gold glove. Orioles sucked, though, that year. Their last year at Memorial Stadium, but he was brilliant. Cecil Fielder came in second in the voting. Unfortunately, he led the league in homers and ribbies, but the Tigers sucked, too. So there you go. 2000, M&T Bank Stadium, a little football. You know, feeling the sting of the Steelers' loss a couple of days ago. Well, how about this day 24 years ago? Ravens shut out Dallas, 27-0. Trent Dilfer, 2 touchdowns, 1 to Quadri Ismail, 1 to Shannon Sharp. Matt Stover kicked 2 field goals. Priest Holmes scored a touchdown. And Fox did this game. I remember watching it. And Pat Summerall, rest in peace, kept calling them the Baltimore Colts. Which I was kind of cool with, to be honest with you. But the Ravens on their way to the Super Bowl championship on this day 24 years ago. Spanked that Dallas ass, kind of like Houston did last night on Monday Night Football. It's Vinny at Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Because of that, week 11's over. We'll come back. It's the Dirty Dozen. Who are the 12 best teams in the NFL heading into week number 12? We'll take your phone calls at 410-583-1057. Got a funhouse trip. Nolan McGraw, I haven't heard from him much today. You're going to get your fill of Nolan coming up around 11:45 or so.
Vinny and Haney's Dirty Dozen. Best NFL teams according to our GM, Vinny Serrato.
You're damn right I'm serious. Look, they might not be pretty, but any one of mine is worth 10 of yours.
105.7 The Fan.
12 weeks done. NFL fun. How about that? We're cruising into this weekend. Then you got Thanksgiving coming up. Giants and Cowboys.
Yeah.
How about a little DeVito versus Cooper Rush for your Thanksgiving enjoyment, everybody. But, hey, it is what it is. They do the schedule way in advance.
I think we start drinking at that time.
I'm way ahead of the curve on that one. But anyway, 12 weeks finished last night. It was Houston 34-10 over said Cowboys. Texans behind Joe Mixon's 3 touchdowns. They pick up their 7th win of the season. We'll be talking about them heading into Christmas as the Ravens go there on Christmas Day. But let's get into it. Dirty Dozen. Who are the 12 best teams according to Vinny?
All right, let's review Week 11. Number 1, Kansas City. 2, Detroit. 3, Baltimore. 4, Buffalo. 5, Pittsburgh. 6, Philly. 7, Minnesota. 8, Washington. 9, Green Bay. 10, the Chargers. 11, Arizona. And 12, San Fran. All right, so coming in at 12, 6-5 Denver. They beat Atlanta 38-6. They're at the Raiders. Bo Nix is the second rookie ever with at least 300 passing yards, 4 touchdowns, and a passer rating of over 140. The other, C.J. Stroud.
Even though the Ravens kicked Denver's rear ends, he looked like he belonged on that Sunday, and he wasn't shell-shocked by it. Nope. He's coming off a monster performance last weekend.
Yeah, no doubt. And Bob, you know what's funny is the two young quarterbacks, the rookie quarterbacks that are playing well, Daniels, 5 years in college, Bo Nix, 6 years in college, yeah, and both at two different schools.
Auburn and Oregon.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that's pretty interesting. You know, so, I mean, that's why, you know, like you talk about the Colts with Richardson. Played, half a season or one? How do you expect him, you know, when Bo Nix has played 6 years of football?
And Trey Lance hasn't played. He's played one game in like 17 years.
Yeah, no doubt. Coming in at 11, 6-4 Arizona. They were on bye, and they're at Seattle. Kyler Murray on targets past the sticks this season. 12 touchdowns, 1 interception.
Getting it down the field.
Yes, he is.
Marvin Harrison Jr. obviously helping that.
He's
cause.
Picking that up.
Yep. And McBride's a stud at tight end, too, by the way.
Coming in at 10, 7-4 Washington. They lost at Philly 26-18, and they are hosting the Cowboys. Since week 5, Dante Fowler leads the NFL with 8 sacks.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. Coming in at 9, 7-3 Green Bay. They won at Chicago 2019 on that blocked field goal. They're hosting the Niners. Jaden Reed averages 130 yards receiving in Packers losses and 32 yards in Packer wins.
Don't throw it to him if you want to win, it sounds like.
Right. Coming in at 8-2 Minnesota. They beat Tennessee 23-13. They're at the Bears. Now, Justin Jefferson, 6,800 career receiving yards are the most ever by a player in their first 5 years.
And he's had a kind of revolving door quarterback situation going on here as well. And, hey, Vikings won 3 in a row quietly.
Yeah, and they're probably going to have a rookie quarterback next year. Second year.
Yeah.
Coming in at 7, 7-4 Baltimore. They lost at Pitt 18-16. They're hosting Chargers Monday night. Ravens average 430 yards of offense per game, 32 more than second place.
Except for Sunday.
Yes. Coming in at 6, 7-3 Chargers. They beat Cincy 34-27. They're hosting the Ravens. Chargers have outscored their opponents 138-49 in the first half. So, keep it close.
Ravens going to be playing catch-up Monday night?
Might be. Yeah, might be. Coming in at 5, 8-2 Philly. Beat Washington 26-18. They're at the Rams. Now, Saquon Barkley leads the NFL with 1,347 combined yards.
That's a big game, too. Yeah. Philly's trying to hold off Washington. Rams trying to stay in the mix in the West. They're playing good football, Philadelphia is right now. They won 6 in a row.
Coming in at 4, 8-2 Pittsburgh. Beat the Ravens 18-16. They're at Cleveland Thursday. Let's go, Brownies! The Steelers are the fifth team since 2000 to win multiple games in a season
without
scoring a touchdown.
They're 2-0.
The 2000 seat Ravens also did that.
Yeah, they didn't score a touchdown for 5 weeks. It's still won two of the games.
All right, coming in at 3, 9-1 Kansas City. They lost 30-21 at Buffalo. They're at Carolina. Patrick Mahomes' quarterback rating has been under 100 in 8 of their 10 games.
How about that?
It's crazy.
I mean, where's this? I mean, they lost Hollywood, on the first series of the preseason?
Yeah.
Rashee Rice has been hurt. I mean, McKinnon's been out. Or not McKinnon, the running back from Rutgers.
Pacheco.
Isaiah Pacheco. Pacheco. I mean, they've had a ton of injuries here.
All right, coming in at 2. 9-2 Buffalo. Beat Kansas City 30-21. They're on bye. Bills lead the NFL with a plus 14 turnover differential. That's pretty damn good. I mean, you're getting a lot of takeaways. And I mean, Bob, when they played, I didn't think their safeties were very good. And I didn't think the secondary and the receivers weren't good.
Well, if you're a fan of the Bills, I'm knocking wood for you. But when Allen gets turnover prone, they come in bunches. He's been doing a very good job, obviously, of taking care of that football.
And then coming in at number one, 9-1 Detroit. Beat Jacksonville 52-6. The Lions have won 9 of their first 10 for the first time since 1934.
1934? That's when Spam McGillicuddy was their leading rusher. And Pork Chop Jones was the top defensive player.
So, in summary, and Detroit deserves to be number one. I mean, they're killing people. And so Detroit is one. Buffalo is two. Kansas City's three. Pittsburgh's four. Philly's five. Chargers six. Baltimore seven. Minnesota eight. Green Bay nine. Washington 10. Arizona 11, Denver 12.
That's your Dirty Dozen. We're the five worst teams. Plenty of candidates for that. We'll bust that one out for you coming up, the Feeble Five, later in the show. But we got time for a call, Nolan McGraw. Let's get out to the phones. It's Vinny and Haney, Nolan McGraw. It's Third Up Tuesday. Let's go to Joe in Woodbury. Joe, thanks for holding. What's up?
Man, I was just saying to myself, don't call me now because you're going to have to come up with a break. Just wanted to clarify yesterday when I said about a coach that has that fire mentality. I wasn't talking about screaming and yelling and all that. I'm just saying their demeanor oozes that fire and that determination. And I heard a couple callers say, are the Ravens, are they mental tough? Well, that starts at the top, if y'all don't know that. I mean, even in your family growing up, it starts in your household with your dad. His mental toughness rubs off on the son. But to me, Harbaugh is one of those ones, if you fall and scratch your knee, he want to kiss it and instead of telling you to get up, shake it off, because you're going to have worse falls of that in life. So here's my last thing. I told this to Quick Draw. Standing up in the locker room, you got two men standing there firing up their team to go out. One's named Jim, one's named John. Who you think will fire up their team the best? And I'm gone. Take it easy.
There's Joe Woodbury saying that John Harbaugh, or Jim Harbaugh, rather, brings more of that leadership quality. He's not kissing your boo-boo. He's telling you to rub some dirt on it and get up there and get back in the game.
Well, I mean, Bob, you're talking about Jim Harbaugh, a guy who had arrhythmia on Saturday night, which is a rapid heart rate, and he's got it all Saturday night in pregame warm-up and everything, and goes in the tent, you know, and I don't know if he took some medication or whatever, and then comes back for the rest of the game. I mean, that's and he's a former player, you know, so he's just a different dude.
Yeah, but John Harbaugh doesn't strike me as a, less than tough love kind of. Same dad, he's the older brother. I'm assuming that if anyone was getting their asses whipped when they were kids, John was doing the ass kicking. You know what I mean?
Although Jim might have been bigger. You know, Jim's kind of a bigger guy.
You got a couple year difference, 10 to 8, 12 to 10. There's a big difference in who's getting their asses whipped. Now, nowadays, you know, things could be a little bit different. Like, I wouldn't fight either one of my brothers, but I'm a wussy.
It's just funny that we're comparing them or contrasting them. They're practically the same guy. Jim and John,
they sound exactly alike when they talk.
Right, and that guy is Jack Harbaugh. They're both a carbon copy of their father.
And Jack talks exact same way.
Yeah, all their cliches, their go-to talking
points. Sharpens iron, baby.
Yeah.
Mighty men.
Nobody's got it better than us, Norm.
It's Vinny and Andy, 105.7 The Fan. Take your phone call, support that 583-1057. You want to join us, News from the Nest? That's coming up in a few. Got Nolan's Funhouse, buy or sell. Hopefully we're counting some Turn It Up Tuesday money at 12:15. And we'll talk Maryland hoops. Big favorites tonight against Canisius, a game you can hear on The Fan. But Chris Nockey, his impressions of the Terps. They're 3-1. Four games in, spirited effort, coulda, woulda, shoulda against Marquette. They didn't, so what do we take away from that? Before we get to the Funhouse, let's go to East Baltimore. It's Jason. Jason, what's up?
Uncle Bob, Uncle Vinny.
What's up, man?
Man, we got to bounce back this week. We're going to beat the Chargers. But let me say this, man, for all the people that's trying to put this on Lamar because he didn't play a perfect game. Well, we've been saying it all year. If Lamar doesn't play a perfect game, the Ravens don't win. And that's not fair. They don't ask Russell Wilson to play a perfect game. They still win. You don't ask Patrick Mahomes to play the perfect game, and his team still win because they can count on somebody else making the play, the defense coming up with a play, or quite frankly, their head coach out-coaching another coach. When is John Harbaugh ever out-coached another head coach? I'm trying to sit back and remember. When did I say, wow, that was a great idea on John Harbaugh's part?
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, you can, when Lamar does have a bad game, he can be criticized. And the thing about it is receivers were open. He was making bad decisions. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, Lamar's still, you know, MVP dude, man. And he just played bad. He did, you know, forget the coaches, forget everything else. He had a bad game. He didn't read things well. He held on the ball too long, and he probably didn't run enough. I mean, it is what it is. He's human.
What about the kicker missing the kicks? Why would you have Nelson Aguilar trying to block the inside guy on that 2-point conversion when everybody knows Tylan Wallace is our best blocking receiver? Where was he at on the play?
Well, when you watch the film of every game, you know, when they run that formation, Aguilar's there every time.
You know what the poorest excuse people make for Harbaugh? Well, if the Ravens get rid of him, he'd be picked up in a second. Well, let that be somebody else's problem then. Because this point is ridiculous. Every week, we win in spite of some of the dumb stuff our head coach do. And you're right, they ask a lot of Lamar. I know he get a lot of praise, but
yeah. I'm like, he gets praise when he deserves it. And most time, he deserves it. But you gotta look at it and say, hey, he had a bad game. It is what it is. You can't, if you go watch that film and say, Lamar was awesome, well, then people are going to think you're an idiot.
But guess what? I would never say that, but guess what? When some quarterbacks have a bad game, their team still figure out a way to win. Look at Goff had five interceptions last couple weeks ago, and they still won the game. They asked a lot of Lamar, man, and sometimes it's unachievable. Every week he got to be spot on. He can't make no mistakes. He got to do this. He got to do that. Where's the accountability for the head man in charge?
All right, Jason, East Baltimore. So that's Harb sucks 5. Harbaugh rules 0 right now. Nolan, how are you feeling over there?
Well, I'll change the subject a little bit. Okay. I'm still running hot, though, but I'll direct that anger elsewhere because this whole rookie of the year thing.
Oh, man, I thought you were going to talk about my 3-hour and 15-minute drive home yesterday.
Well, we kept time for that later.
Yeah. You got a pride and egg on my forehead yesterday.
Rookie of the year, if you didn't hear the news, Yankee starter Luis Gil was awarded. He had, you know, 2 more first-place votes than Colton Cowser. It looks like it was a very close vote. But here's my issue with it. Luis Gil, his numbers for the year, they're solid if you just look at it. I mean, 3.5 ERA, made nearly 30 starts, over 100 strikeouts. It passes the eye test, but it was really split half and half. His first 14 starts, ERA of 2.03. His next 15, or his final 15, ERA over 5. I mean, that's night and day difference, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Colton Cowser was, you know, all-star material from game 1 to 162, but he was there most of the time. You mentioned it earlier, Bob, gold glove caliber defense in a tough left field to play at Camden Yards. The vote was reflected as close, so I don't necessarily have a problem with that. You know, if Luis Gil ran away with it, or even Wells finished second ahead of Cowser, maybe I'd be more up in arms, but if I had a vote, I'd go with the Moo Man.
Well, Sporting News named Mason Miller as the Rookie of the Year, and he got, what, 1 third-place vote or 1 first-place
vote?
Not
even a finalist.
Yeah, so unfortunate for Colton Cowser, sure, because unfortunate for the Orioles, yeah, because you would have got a one of them competitive balance picks. But now move on, and I get better. Level up, and if I don't have the Orioles schedule in front of me, full disclosure, but I'm pretty sure that 17-5 game where the Orioles kind of hit their peak, he was the starting pitcher, and the Orioles knocked him out in less than 2 innings. And then, of course, the Orioles went down the toilet after that record-wise. But Cowser deserved consideration 3 years in a row. You've had a finalist for Rookie of the Year. Not bad for a guy who apparently sucks at his job all of a sudden.
And it wasn't even the rookie we expected.
Yeah.
Entering the season, he thought, oh, Jackson Holliday. He's a lock to be a finalist. Some people probably even considered him a lock to win the award. And then, sure enough, here comes Cowser. So, hey, why not make it 4 in a row next year?
Are you still running hot?
Oh, I can talk myself out of it.
Yeah, you got time for Funhouse, or are we good?
We'll do a few. Yeah.
Let's do it.
Quick Draws, Funhouse.
An hour and 15 minutes to get home. road work.
The rumors
ahead of that department going to say, hey, we're finished. Never.
This side of the Chesapeake.
I like that quick draw.
105.7 The
Balls
Fan.
Road is still not done.
Hell no. 695 sucks. All right. Sorry about that.
Real breaking news there.
Yeah, 100. Oh, never mind. I'm going to get myself in trouble. Next.
All right, get some texts here. First one from Don, who says, my biggest problem with Harbaugh is not his lack of emotion, it's a lack of adjustments. Always deferring to his assistant coaches or the coordinators after the game. How about you get more involved during the game? You're the head coach after all. Why is it always deflecting after the game?
See, I totally disagree. I mean, especially if you got confidence in your coordinators. And Harbs is involved during the week setting up the game. I mean, we had George Seifert in San Fran. George, you know, just we had Mike Shanahan on offensive coordinator. He called every play. Ray Rhodes called every defensive play. You know, and George was a former D coordinator. So, a lot of times, good head coaches are CEOs. You know, Belichick was involved in defense and probably a little bit of everything, really. But probably, I would imagine that Josh McDaniels, when they were calling plays, he was calling all the plays.
Reed calls the shots offensively for Kansas City.
No doubt. So you got to let your coaches do their, just like with your players, do what you do best. All right? You're the head coach? Do it. Do the head coach thing. Your offense, you hired a coordinator to run the offense. You hire a coordinator to run the defense. Your job is let them do their things, and you handle everything else during the game. And during the week, that's when you can get involved in game planning.
A good example for me would be Detroit with Dan Campbell.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't long ago, and I was guilty of this. I, quite frankly, didn't think he would last as a head coach because he was so aggressive with his fourth down decisions, anything really. He was just overly aggressive, and the team didn't match it. Then they start winning. Well, now Dan Campbell's the coach of the year. You know, he's one of the best coaches in the league. Winning cures all, obviously, mm-hmm. but he's like Harbaugh. He's not calling plays. He has a player's background, but he's deflecting to his coordinators to run the show.
I just think, Andy Reid's, he calls the plays. Otherwise, you know, what other really good coach? Like you just mentioned Detroit. Minnesota, he calls the plays. Green Bay, he calls the plays. You know, those guys call the plays. But then defensively, a lot of times those guys that call the plays, like North Turner, he called the plays in Dallas. He called the plays in Washington when I was there. And North ran the offense. For the defense, nothing to do with it. Nothing.
And how about one more here talking Terps tonight's game? Texter says, I'm optimistic about Willard's team this year after watching the Marquette game. They played fast and loose on Friday night against a tough opponent. Clearly have enough scoring options in that starting five, unlike years past. They'll be a force in the Big Ten for sure.
Yeah, Julian Reese had kind of an off game Friday against the Golden Eagles, but he and Patrick Queen can make a formidable duo in the paint. We'll talk more about this with Chris Nockey, and the shooting percentage beyond the arc still isn't great. It's not like the 2016 Golden State Warriors, but then again, compared to last year's team, it kind of is. But Chris Nockey, talking Maryland Hoops, bottom of the hour. News from the Nest coming up next. You want to join us, you can. And then buy or sell. Where's the money? We'll count it, hopefully, at 12:15.